SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. Going back, and I hadn't looked at it again since last night, and I was in trouble, you know, immediately. That first leg winner, you know, when you look at a race like that, maiden 20, and they all look, you know, they all look either like career maidens or, you know, that there's not a lot to grab onto. A first-time starter, and the horse did not take any money. It wasn't like there was some indication that riding on a winner, Tom Morley, for Vinlauer, Homebred, a Majestic Perfection filly, but went to the front and repelled challengers, you know, including the favorite, and really the two horses that I tried to tiptoe through that first leg and ran second and third. So that obviously knocked a bunch of people out. Then you had that crazy 2-5. Why advance notice would have been 2-5 in there, even after the scratches, was a little crazy. And my man, Super G, Siaka, Dangerous Edge, and Jose Ortiz just sat back, and boy, this horse is in nice form. Competitive Edge, or Dangerous, the son of Competitive Edge, and that's Scary Nine, led by Michael Imperio and Vince Scuderi. Bella Sophia just ran off, won by a dozen, and got a 90, I think a 90, what did Andy post? A 93 buyer. So some good, first chance I really had to watch a day's card at Belmont came yesterday. So, and it's going to be a good weekend. Belmont, obviously, the focus tomorrow with the Man of War. And Man of War's came up really good. Really, really good. Peter Pan, it's going to be, I haven't seen any update on whether risk-taking, what Chad's going to do with risk-taking, run him or wait for Preakness. And we'll talk about Preakness in a second. And then you got the Vagrancy, the Fillies and Mares, 6.5, and the Bogey, Harvey's Little Goyle, versus Civil Union. Feels like it comes down to those two. When you look at it closely, there's also the Run Happy came up. I don't know why the Run Happy came up so light with just 5. But Firenze Fire has been so good for a long period of time. And Chateau in there for Atrus, Stan the Man. We'll talk to Nick. We'll handicap the cross country as well, which pairs up with Churchill. Of course, last night, Churchill with both Churchill and Belmont with these Thursday. There's going to be some of these Thursday late afternoon into evening options. So speaking of Preakness, we'll talk to Marty McGee in minutes here, and won't get too deep into the weeds about Preakness, you know, without Marty, and then Jay Privman at the top of hour two. But you must have seen, I imagine by now, that on the NTRA teleconference yesterday, Brad Cox, after revealing that Essential Quality definitely wasn't coming to Baltimore with us the other day, Tuesday, yesterday, the reveal that neither Mandaloon nor Caddo River are going to participate in the Preakness. And this was really met with uh, incredulousness, I think, is probably the right people were. I was plenty when I saw the popped up on as an alert, from one of the trades, and I just sort of I had to read it twice. I said, wait a minute, neither one is going to run, and I the philosophy currently, I'll let Marty and Jay, I mean, they've covered these, longer than I have even. I'll get their input because all winter, the weird thing about this is all winter long after Breeders' Cup, we talk about horses, three-year-olds being tested and stretching out and, in some cases, being auditioned for the classic season and the importance of these three races in the spring. And yes, there's going to be other grade one opportunities, later in the summer. Haskell, Travers, and Pennsylvania Derby. But I you've gone through all of this to get to these three races, and now your horse is probably more fit and ready and tighter. It's one thing if you compete in Derby and say, okay, we'll wait for Belmont the 5 weeks. This was a template set by Bobby Frankel with Empire Maker. I'm kind of mystified. You've got a chance, your horse is tight as a drum, and all you have to do is gallop him in for 11, 12 days, a couple of days off after Derby. So to bypass this race and talk about, down the road opportunities. I mean, it's one thing if you want to come out and say, listen, the horse is knocked out. This was a challenge, and he ran great, and he got placement. When it comes to Mandaloon, I am a little surprised, particularly. Monday's conversation, which was rudely interrupted by Bob Baffert.
Well, I think when you win seven Kentucky Derbies, you're allowed to have the floor.
True. I guess you could reiterate. I'm not going to just pretend that everybody heard the conversation from Monday, but reiterate and with the benefit of a week since, more or less, some further postscript in your Derby thoughts.
Nothing's really changed in terms of my evaluation of the race from what I said on your show on Monday. There were several horses who looked like they had, the potential to be up on the lead, but either through, the way they broke or strategizing, chose not to go for it. And, the Medina Spirit people did. And, by my way of thinking, that's how you need to behave in the Kentucky Derby. You need to go for it. It's very analogous to sometimes you watch a football game, and you can tell a coach that's playing not to lose instead of playing to win. And that, to me, was the difference here. There were some people who played the Derby not to lose instead of playing to win. And the Medina Spirit people played to win. It was like, we're going to go for it, and if it works out, great. And if he fades and finishes 10th, well, we took our best shot. And there were other horses in the race who I think had the potential to, if not be on the lead, at least be close. And, in the case of Rock Your World, look, he just got completely eliminated at the start. But there were others in there who could have been, I thought, closer and weren't. And, they got hot and dirty. And Medina Spirit got the roses. And, we've said this countless times over the years on your show, but, Bob Baffert's horses are trained to win the Kentucky Derby. He had a lot of horses this year, and the only one who made it was Medina Spirit. So, you know, there's, you can look at it through a couple different prisms on the accomplishment, you know, to be honest about it. But, you know, when they get there, they're not there for participation trophies. You know, the ones who are in the race are meant for, you know, they're ready to go to win. They're not in there just to run. I mean, that's one of the reasons Concert Tour was not in the race. They just did not think he was at his best coming off that, the worst race of his life in the Arkansas Derby, and then to jam back in 3 weeks off of that. It just wasn't, you know, he wasn't ready for it. You know, they think he'll be ready now for the Preakness, having had 5 weeks between starts. So that's why he wasn't in there. He wasn't in there for a participate. You know, he would have been a participation trophy horse. So they don't run for that barn in the Kentucky Derby. The only ones that run are meant for it. And, you know, I was, you know, on the, you know, the day before the race when I was on your show, I picked Medina Spirit second behind Hot Rod Charlie, and I was surprised that he was the price he was. Five starts, never worse than second. The only two horses who had beaten him were Life is Good, who wasn't in the race and was the acknowledged favorite earlier in the year, and Rock Your World, who on the day beat him, was on a track that favored speed and being towards the inside, and he, Rock Your World, took advantage of that profile on the day, and Medina Spirit didn't. So there was a lot to me to like about him, and some of the reaction afterwards, I think, overlooks logic.
Yeah, agreed. And I've driven that. I've tried to drive that point home as well. Series of workouts that might be published for five or even six furlongs, but in fact they're 7/8 and mile workouts in essentially an Alan Jerkins fashion, and nobody else does it. And it, you would think that that point would, you know, would be apparent, but I have said, Jay, that part of it might be that nobody necessarily has the relationship with the owners where they've been instructed or conditioned to be well aware that it's a gauntlet and your horse may end up, sidelined as part of the, you know, being leaned on to get to this race. And I'm sure that's a difficult equation or conversation for trainers to have with owners, and I can't guarantee you we're going to get to the race if the horse doesn't stand up to the regimen it takes to get there and win.
Well, but I'll give you sort of a variation on that theme. Yeah. I don't completely agree with that, because from this context, you know, owners send horses to Baffert because they want to be in the Kentucky Derby. So
right.
They know going in. I mean, that's why he gets those horses. You know, the Starlight SF Racing Group, I mean, they sent him, I can't tell you how many numbers of two-year-olds last year.
Right.
You know, and it's worked out with horses like, Authentic, and who they sold partway through the season, and Justify. This year it didn't, but that's the business model. They flood the zone, and, you know, if one or two of them pan out, it pays for the rest. So that's how, you know, and it's not just with that group. I mean, there's others, but that's, you know, that's the kinds of horses that he gets. So, you know, I think you got to look at it through that prism as well.
Jay, let's also, before we talk about what went on with the Hall of Fame, which is coming up, we'll have that discussion, and let's get that part two that I dangled Monday, which is some of the questions in the aftermath of the draw, and even some questions in the aftermath of Derby, and actually part of that could morph into the field as it's shaping up for Baltimore. Mark Cassie made the point that why are we going through the exercise of accruing these points if then, you know, the top point getters are at the mercy of the pill pull. Mark kind of advocating for a return to a prioritization of stall selection.
Right. And as I said on your show on Monday, he's not the first person to have brought this up. You just really kind of the most recent. This is something that has been bandied about on a, you know, on a low level for a number of years. And, you know, there's some merit to that. But look, you could end up in a post that you think is great, and if a horse next to you veers in and the horse on the other side veers out, then, you know, you're squeezed. It's not going to matter. So I think there's some merit to it. It would maybe encourage people to run more, because then they wouldn't have to worry about, you know, if they accrued the most points, then they would know they're not going to get the rail or post, you know, or post 19 or 20 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's no, I don't know that there's any, your post, you know, like I'll give your Rock Your World as a perfect example. I mean, that's the kind, post 15 was a great post for that horse in theory. No, because he's never had kickback before. So if he's there, if he breaks well, he can go to the lead. And if he breaks half a step slow but doesn't get, you know, crunched, if he ends up stalking, he's at least out in the clear with no kickback. Well, he got crunched. But, I mean, I'm sure if they were the leading point getter, that's one of the posts they would have considered getting. And so, you know, if horses on either side of you, you know, make a sandwich, a Rock Your World sandwich out of you, it doesn't matter that you've been able to pick first. So I'm not against the notion of doing it that way. I just think to simplistically believe that that's going to make all posts, you know, better or something like that is naive. I think it would do is maybe reward people for, or encourage people to run maybe a little bit more. Other than that, I don't know what else it would do.
How about the other portion of conversation point on you know, the lack of the, you know, the pace horse types of what now feels like a bygone era that guarantees you know, an honest pace? What do you make of this extended run? Marty touched on it, Jay, a little bit ago. Horses on or near the lead just seem to be, you know, the only Derby winners of late.
I mean, you need to have contending speed. You know, there's not the pace meltdowns that we've had in the past. So, you know, Orb was a year when there were points, and he came from well back and won. I think each circumstance is different. But generally speaking, yes, forwardly placed horses have done well, but we haven't had the breakaway kind of paces that we've had in the past when you had horses in there like Triniberg or horses like that. But that's because we've gone to a point system where you're rewarding current form. The most valued point scoring races are the last round of prep races, and horses who accrued a lot of earnings at two, that's immaterial now. You know, you used to get horses who had made a ton of money sprinting at
right.
two, and that money was already in the bank, and so they were in the race, where if those kinds of horses now, they've got to perform at a mile and a 16th and a mile and an eighth, or they go in the Louisiana Derby a mile and 3/16, and they're not capable of doing it. And the point values of those races mean that those horses get lapped. I mean, like a good example would be Jackie's Warrior. You know, not that they would have gone on with him off his performance when he ran in the Rebel, but that's that type of a horse in the past would have had the earnings from his two-year-old form, winning the Champagne and the Hopeful and all that. You know, if he were in the hands of people who just wanted to run in the Derby no matter what, under the old system with the earnings, that's the kind of horse who would have been in the race and obviously impacting the pace to a significant degree. And those horses need to now perform as three-year-olds in order to make it into the Derby.
Right.
So that's just an example of how it's changed. And yeah, the pace isn't as quick as it used to be. But, you know, by my way of looking at it, the overall impact of having the point system as opposed to earnings is you get a better field in terms of current form. And so I like the current system compared to the old system of earnings, because I think you're getting horses who have run well recently, and they're the ones that are in the race, and I think that's what you'd rather have overall than horses who are just sort of end up in there because they were really good at two, and even though they haven't trained on, they've accrued enough earnings to be in there and maybe knock out a horse who's run better recently. So, you know, to me, on balance, this is a better way to do it.
Well, that delivers us to the doorstep of our next crisis. Why aren't horses that finished second, third, and fourth in the Derby running in Baltimore?
I don't. You'd have to ask, you know, Brad Cox and, you know, and Doug O'Neill, because those are the two people who, you know, who are involved in that. I mean, I think you can come up with good theories as to why. I mean, in the case of both Mandaloon and Hot Rod Charlie, don't forget those two horses that had 6 weeks off into the Kentucky Derby, and it looks like they were adjudged as, you know, not the 2 week turnaround would just be too abrupt for them coming back. So, you know, in the case of Hot Rod Charlie, they're pointing for the Belmont. I'm not sure that Essential Quality, that Mandaloon will end up there, but, you know, that's certainly a possibility. We'll have to see what they end up doing. But I think going from a 6 week turnaround to a 2 week turnaround, maybe they thought, you know, there was a real bounce potential there, wheeling them back in that context would be my guess. You know, also with Mandaloon, I mean, don't forget he's run some inconsistent races, and, you know, I think they're taking a long view of him. I mean, he is by into mischief, and sometimes they're a little bit goofy, and you want to give them a little more time to maybe not make, you know, if you jam those horses back, horses by him or, you know, or by Tappet, sometimes those horses don't react well to that, and I can see if you're taking the long view, we want to have a 3-year-old for later in the year, and at four, that's, you know, I kind of understand that move. It's unfortunate in regards to the Preakness, but from a long-term management standpoint, I have some sympathy to what they're, you know, what they're doing in that regard. You know, and don't forget, in the case of Essential Quality, it's not just the trainer. There's, you know, the ownership group is extremely involved in the management of Godolphin horses. So there's that aspect of things to consider as well when it comes to management of horses and trying to make stallions out of these horses. So those are other factors that end up getting into the mix. You know, when it comes to Caddo River, you know, to me, that's the more puzzling one as to why you wouldn't run him as opposed to now they're going to run him in the Matt Wynn. And my only guess would be just the way the pace is coming up for this race with Medina Spirit and Concert Tour both already in there. I think just off pure handicapping, they thought that going to the Matt Wynn might give him a better chance to have success and then more success going forward than going against those two because you know, he did win the battle, but lose the war in the Arkansas Derby with Concert Tour, and now he'd have not only him but Medina Spirit to deal with at a farther distance. So that would be my assumption as to why that decision was made.
Well, I invite everybody as well to read Jay's post Derby expanded comments as well, and we'll look forward, Jay, to full Preakness coverage next week. Let me shift for the balance of the conversation to Wednesday's reveal of the Hall of Fame honorees and inductees for 2021, and certainly
before we go on to that, pardon me for interrupting you, but
not
I do want to say that as you were just alluding to my post Derby analysis, on which I gave Midnight Bourbon a shout out for his trip, and I had said on your show on Monday that if he ran, I would be picking him, and I was very gratified to see that they are indeed going on with him, because I just thought, you know, I thought he ran great in the Derby, considering where he was early on, and I'm glad they decided to go on with him. I think he's very live in the Preakness, so I just wanted to sneak that in. Yes, now let's move on to the to the Hall of Fame.
Well, and I am with you, having picked Midnight Bourbon in Derby. The Hall of Fame.
Well, that was a bad pick, but for the Preakness, it might not be.
Swing. That was good. Jay, we had every expectation that Todd Pletcher would obviously be you know, selected into Hall of Fame. And American Pharoah seemed obvious too. On the steeplechase 4-year committee, Jack Fisher was an acclamation type as well. Your thoughts, though, about the overall results?
Yeah, I was just surprised that none of the other 8 finalists got in. I'm not saying all 8 should get in, but I was surprised that, you know, none of them got in. I guess the nominating committee, on which I'm one of the members, I guess we're doing a poor job of putting forth horses that are Hall of Fame worthy because the overall electorate, you know, doesn't agree. But, you know, to me, there are several horses on here, you know, include as well as trainers and jockey, who all are, you know, deserve far more, you know, are to me are worthy of getting in. I don't agree. Like our group, we don't collectively agree on who all gets on the ballot, but you need more than 2/3 support from our nominating committee to make the ballot. And if you get more than 2/3 support from our committee, but less than 50% from the overall electorate, there's a disconnect there. And I'm baffled as to, you know, what that is. You know, as you know, from not only, you know, previous years, but also in the last 48 hours, you know, I just don't understand how somebody can look at Kona Gold's past performances and his body of work and then go, nah, not a Hall of Famer. I don't get that. And I would love, you know, to have an on-air debate with anybody on, you know, of your, you know, if you know anybody who voted against him, who's a voter, who wanted to have that debate, I would welcome it because I would love to hear the reasons. I'm not going to say logic, but I would love to hear the reasons that someone thinks Kona Gold's not a Hall of Famer.
As it happens, the cause célèbre of sprinters, Jay, overall has been a topic that has been covered here for a long time, and you know quite a bit about being associated with the nomination side, the backlog that was created from an individual that is departed from the scene, that was just anti sprinter, that had this crazy notion that sprinters weren't Hall of Fame worthy, and it's a very odd it was an odd notion then, and the fact that, you know, the fact that a horse like this can't be acknowledged is it's mystifying.
Well, a few points there. I'm not sure that the person you're referring to is still not part of the process, but you know, to hang it all on one person to me is that might be an example of it. But
right.
Look, you know, less than 50% of the voters, the Hall of Fame doesn't release vote totals, which, you know, I disagree with that platform, but I just serve at their pleasure, you know, as do the nominating committee people. And there's some things they do that we don't agree with, but that's part of the process. And if you want to, you know, be part of it, you have to, you know, we've tried to move them forward, and I think some of the things that have happened in terms of the way the ballot is done now, where it's a straight up and down vote instead of a quota of like, well, we're going to let one male horse in each year and one female horse in and one trainer and one jockey. I mean, that's to me preposterous. There's not an equal amount of Hall of Fame worthy individuals from those four disciplines every year. So I like that it's now a straight up and down vote on who gets in. But, you know, there's a disconnect somewhere where, you know, less than half the people who voted this year thought, for instance, Kona Gold was worthy of the Hall of Fame or Corey Nakatani. And I just don't, I don't know what that horse or that jockey would have to do, or, you know, what you'd want to see more to think that they belong. I don't get it. You'd have to have somebody on there who doesn't think like I do on that to get the explanation, and I'd love to hear it, but I'm baffled by it.
Participation in five Breeders' Cups. The schedule for people that were looking for, number of grade ones. I mean, there's a limit. There's a fairly finite universe of grade one sprints, particularly when, when his career started.
I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, that was something that I saw, reaction of, he only won two grade ones. Well, okay. Well, let me pick that argument apart for you and leave it in, the entrails on the floor. There were four grade one sprints in the entire country for older males in both 1999 and 2000 at the heart of Kona Gold's career. By comparison, there were 12 races for older females on dirt at a mile or more that were grade one both of those years. So there were far more opportunities if you were an older female to rack up, grade one wins than if you were Kona Gold. And I think that's something that, a smart voter should be taking into consideration. In addition, the whole graded stakes situation, as you know, is backward looking. Races get graded based on how they've scored out in previous years. So in other words, a race gets downgraded, not because of how the race came up this year, but because of how it graded out the previous few years. And in the case of Kona Gold specifically, there were races that he won that at the time were grade two races, both the Bing Crosby and Ancient Title, that became grade one in the aftermath of his performances. And the reason those races were upgraded to grade one were because of his body of work and him going on to run well in multiple Breeders' Cups, including winning one and setting a track record in the one that he won at Churchill Downs. So if you're going to, knock him down, by my way of thinking, stupidly, for not having won enough grade ones when the opportunity for him to run in grade ones was limited compared to an older dirt female, then at the least you should give him credit for having raised some of those races to be grade ones because of what he was accomplishing. And, to look at those grade two wins in the Bing Crosby and the Ancient Title through a different prism. So to me, you can't have it both ways. I mean, if you're going to knock him down for not winning enough grade ones, I think you need to really look at it in the context of how that was achieved. And, obviously, most people either don't consider that or if they did consider that, don't consider it important. But I do.
Yeah, I do as well. And, you mentioned 99 and 2000, 2001. I mean, the run that he went on where he was first or second in about 15 straight races, and, the horses that beat him were Artax and Big Jag, essentially. Son of a Pistol beat him in a San Carlos, beat him an absolute dirty nose. That was as nice an extended period that a horse could perform.
I had somebody tell me before that, one of the reasons they don't know that Kona Gold measures up is because he didn't win 50% of his starts. He was 14 for 30 lifetime. And my argument to that is, well, you're penalizing him for being a gelding and sticking around and running at ages 7 and 8 when he probably wasn't as good as when he was 4, 5, and 6 years old. But he didn't really have a choice. So let's say hypothetically he was retired after his six-year-old year. Well, he would have been 12 for 23, and then those last 2 years when he went 2 for 7 are excised, and he's got the more than 50% that you're supposedly looking for here. I mean, to me, again, you've got to take everything in context. If you're going to penalize a gelding for sticking around, you might not be looking at this through, glasses that have been cleaned properly.
And, I I one of my favorite things about a horse like this from that era is when you look at the DRF PPs and you look at his figures and how a horse like this would look in this era,
right?
With those numbers.
The other thing is, tell me a better sprinter over the last 30 years. I'll hang up and listen. I mean, it's just.
Thanks for the call.
There isn't one. There isn't one.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a better sprinter over the last 30 years than that horse. So, but I think there's, like you said before, there's probably some bizarre bias against horses who are just a sprinter. But to me, it's like, that's like saying, well, he's just a grass miler. Well, no, there's, if you're good at your specialty, you're brilliant at your specialty, you're,
yep.
You qualify. That's what you are. You shouldn't be penalized for that. So I don't know. I don't get it. I do know this. I mean, he's in a few more years, he's going to be eligible for the Historic Review Committee. And if he doesn't get in on the regular ballot, I'm sure the Historic Review Committee will put him in because he belongs. I'm not on that committee, but I have full confidence that they'd make the right decision. But, I he's been on the ballot a number of times, but he doesn't get through. And I don't know. I don't get it.
I'll fold in a couple of esoteric kinds of things. I mentioned the figures, and for those that don't have it in front of them, he had a career best buyer of 123, but he had buyers 110 or higher 17 times.
Right.
We just don't,
115 just, or higher 10 times.
10 times, yeah.
10 times, 115. Yeah. I mean, nobody runs 115 anymore at all.
Period, yes.
Right.
And Jay, the other one that people like for when you're qualifying a horse like this is track records. Oh, 5.5 furlong track record at Santa Anita and the 6 furlong record for in the Breeders' Cup at Churchill in 20. So in
right.
2000,
he ran a
so.
Track record time at Gulfstream the year Artax beat him, but Artax was a half length faster.
Right. And was a champion, had a championship to his credit in 2000. I don't get it. It's very strange. You certainly covered Todd Pletcher for the breadth of your career. Some thoughts about Todd's confirmation.
He was an obvious, slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer. The number of training titles he's had at Saratoga and Gulfstream and Belmont, and the success that he's had in Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup races, and winning it with all different kinds of horses. He's obviously very good with 2-year-olds, but he's good in classic races. He's had grass champions, like English Channel. The scope of his accomplishments is pretty stunning. The multiple stakes wins in major stakes races. Most recently, obviously, his 4th Kentucky Oaks, but he's won a number of major races 4 times or more. That was an easy one. Even all the voters couldn't mess that one up.
And American Pharoah.
Right. I mean, 2-time champion, Triple Crown winner, horse of the year. Obvious, those are slam dunks. So no surprise, obviously, that they got in their first year of eligibility. I had somebody on Twitter tell me that they thought Pletcher should have been in earlier, and I had to remind them that this was his first year of eligibility, so it was kind of hard for him to get in earlier. So.
they just can't shove you into the Hall of Fame. Well, and it's funny that the qualifiers. I like that part of it that the active active inclusion as opposed to retiree. I mean, like golf. Golf does that, and you have a certain number of years and tournament wins and whatever the qualifiers are for that Hall of Fame.
Well, you kind of have to do it for trainers because, a lot of these guys don't retire. So So I mean,
they'd
never get in until, you know, years after they passed away if you didn't do it this way. So
exactly. So
I think it's an appropriate workaround.
Jay, I appreciate all the various topics. What's on the agenda for Thoroughbred LA tomorrow?
A lot of this, actually. Forward-looking stuff towards the Preakness, a discussion of the Hall of Fame, and a special guest appearance from the man who runs racing, Ron Anderson.
I had him on as well this week, and look forward to Thoroughbred LA tomorrow for everybody. And Jay, hi-ho.
Hi-ho. All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Jay. Jay Pribman, everybody. DRF Pribman. Let's take our break. We're 10 minutes past the bottom of the hour, so 10 minutes past the halfway point, and we've managed to find ourselves in the weeds here suddenly. We've got to get Scully in and Hammer, and then Nick Tamro. I mentioned Tom Anthony, who hit for 100,000. He was the captain on a vessel that negotiated the rocky shoals of the early pick five Saturday. A very clever ticket. And there's some fun parts of that story. And Papo Morales will get into formtowin.com. And hope you were able to take in yesterday's Form to Win Twitchy. We've got, you can always look it up on the Wager YouTube channel to, you know, catch up on you know, the technicalities of utilizing. I've got a wonderful note from somebody that has taken up the Form to Win subscription and scored out on Saturday and is really having fun with it, and that's the idea. And by the way, speaking of, you know, we had the contest, we had the Big Four, and there's going to be another Big Four next week. We're going to do another one because it was such a hit, and this one will have time, obviously, to get out in front of. So we we'll have some fun again and give away another $1,000. All right, take another shot at it. I'm sure some people went 0-for-4 and are just into the bit, trying to they want another chance. You're going to get it, the Big Four. Second half, though, of the weekend preview at the races, Twin Spires weekend preview. And I guess Hammer probably next. All right, back after this. Try to reach Hammer, Case. And I didn't really talk to him, actually. He was in the car. And I haven't heard from him since he started back from Hot Springs. He was at the Cadillac Ranch last we knew. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents